Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on March 13th, 2020, and is current through the Star Trek Picard episode Broken Pieces, so beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 30-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are 5 television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone. And my guest this week is one of the C's in CNC of the Trek Geeks Podcast Network. It's Bill Smith. Bill, welcome to Weekly Trek.
Alex, thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to be here. I'm an avid listener of Weekly Trek, and I'm just glad that everybody else canceled on you to allow me to fit in.
I knew I had to get you on for a Picard episode. So, Bill, I want to know something that's got you feeling good about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
I have to say, you mentioned Broken Pieces, and I have to say that the Star Trek Picard episode Broken Pieces has me moving probably faster than Warp 10, which means I'm going to turn into a lizard at any moment. It was just such a delight. It excited me. It showed that the optimism in Star Trek is not dead. And there's just great things coming from Picard. So I'm so jazzed about that episode that I'm on a real high right now.
Yeah, it was a really great episode, particularly from the perspective of a lot of the like really great character moments that there were. I thought the Rios storyline was really good. The sort of culmination of the storyline around the different holograms of his that we've been seeing and the explanation for who they all are and why they all the way they are and why Rios is the way that he is was actually, I thought really satisfying. And you're right. I mean, in terms of, you know, we have definitely seen our crew and our heroes hit their low point, and it does seem like we're now sort of cresting back up again towards the big finish.
I've been saying for some time that I think Picard himself is the optimism in this series, and he's going to drag Starfleet back to that optimism by the time the series is done. I think that's the groundwork that's being laid. I could be wrong. I'm wrong oftentimes on Discovering Trek, and I'm okay with it, but I feel really good about this one.
Yeah, it certainly seemed like the scene with Clancy this week was definitely a bookend to the scene with Clancy from the second episode of the series, and that, you know, this was him basically being like, I told you so, and her being like, yeah, okay, I get it.
I couldn't agree more. I thought it was a great way to pivot from there into the final 2 episodes of the season, which I have to imagine are going to be nothing but spectacular.
Yeah, it certainly seems like there are a lot of interesting things on the way from taking a look at the preview to next week's episode. And I have to imagine also that there are some surprises in store. So far, a lot of what we've seen, particularly in terms of like returning actors and characters, has been very much stuff that I think, with the exception of Icheb, we knew about prior, but I have to think there's some ace in the hole that they have up their sleeve, and I can't wait to find out what it is.
Agreed. I think we're going to be surprised, and I'm looking forward to that. I like it when Star Trek can surprise me. I look at these new series more like books than I do television series in a way, and I'm enjoying each chapter, and that tells me that I'm on the way to hopefully a really good finish.
So the thing I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week is I've been reflecting a lot this week, as it seems like there are some changes in store to everyday life as a result of the spread of this coronavirus that is causing a lot of problems increasingly around the globe and increasingly here in the US as well. You know, lots of people are going to be spending lots of time indoors, and that sucks for a lot of people. But I was reflecting on how, you know, with all of this extra time, it's a great thing that there is so much Star Trek to enjoy at nearly 800 hours worth of television show. That should keep even the hardiest of work from homers and self-isolators and social distancers engaged over the next couple of months. And maybe, who knows, we'll pick up a couple of new fans along the way from people who you know, find themselves having a lot of time on their hands and who want to try out America's greatest science fiction franchise.
I've been preparing for this moment my entire life. No people and nothing but Star Trek. I am all in, Alex.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
So our first story this week comes from The Hollywood Reporter. It is about our beloved William Shatner, who, as everybody knows, played Captain James T. Kirk on the original series and the first 7 Star Trek movies. Shatner, who has flirted with the idea of returning to play his role as Captain Kirk a number of times over the last decade, has signaled that actually he's changed his mind and perhaps he is done with the character. In a tweet responding to a fan question about whether he would be interested in returning to Star Trek at this point, Shatner said, "I think Kirk's story is pretty well played out." And that does seem to be a bit of a change for the actor who, you know, has teased multiple times over the last decade that he would be interested in reprising his role in some way, shape, or form, as long as it was not just a cameo appearance. We know that there was a scripted scene for Shatner in Star Trek 2009 that he ultimately declined to appear in because he did not feel that the character's role was particularly substantial. But I also have to wonder, you know, Shatner being a very proud man, is he just saying that he is not interested in returning to the role anymore because nobody's asking him? So, you know, it could be a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. Bill, what do you think? Shatner, is he done as Captain Kirk?
I think he's done. I think that giant pile of rocks in Generations that was on top of the body of James T. Kirk is kind of emblematic at this point. You know, honestly, James T. Kirk died in our time in 1994, and it's been a long time. I don't count the Oscars when Seth MacFarlane hosted. I don't think anybody should.
Yeah.
But I think that he realizes that, you know, his opportunity to come back in a meaningful and substantive way has probably passed by. And I don't blame him for thinking that. I have to believe that, you know, that a cameo is really never anything he's been interested in at any point in his career. And so I'm not surprised that he's okay with just sort of letting go of Kirk. I think that if Quentin Tarantino would come knocking on the door, I think he would have, simply because of the A-list opportunity there. But otherwise, I think he's just done and just realizing that, you know, it's time to say it.
Yeah, and it's also, Shatner is now, he's in his mid, I think, to late 80s. He is, you know, knocking on the door of a very advanced age. And at a certain point in time, you've got to just say, you know, I'm going to enjoy the rest of my life and sort of leave this incredible legacy that you have in the past. And you're right. I mean, I think it's the challenge with Shatner as opposed to someone like Leonard Nimoy is that we really did see the end of the character on the screen. And as we have sort of moved decades beyond that point, it's really tough to see how Shatner himself can return and play a character who is supposed to have died at a much younger age chronologically than he is right now.
As you figure, William Shatner will be 89 years old in just 9 days from this recording. I think he gets that the time for Kirk is probably past.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Though, I mean, Patrick Stewart is 79 this year. So he's a full decade behind, but that's not all that far.
No, it's true. And Picard is supposed to be, what, 94 in Star Trek Picard? So, you know, I guess maybe there's something really good in Earl Grey tea that keeps Patrick Stewart looking vital.
Yes, it does have restorative powers. He's been spending a little too much time on Nepenthe.
Oh, and I think I would too, because that pizza looked fantastic.
Didn't it just?
I'm not big on bunny corn, but I would absolutely give it a try, because Riker looks like he's at least mastered that, since he can't do an omelet to save his life.
Yeah, right. As long as it doesn't have any Owan eggs in it, it seems like he's good to go. So our next story this week is another Michael Chabon extraordinaire. So TrekCore collected a number of responses he gave to fan questions over on Instagram into one article. He answers, I think, about 100 questions after every episode. He's done it since about episode 106. Again, this is sort of him kind of responding to all these questions that get thrown at him. He's doing it right now over on Instagram for the most recent episode 109, Broken Pieces. So if you head over there, you'll find even more of these responses to questions some of the more interesting ones that I picked out, to the question about whether Star Trek Picard depicts a Federation that then ties into Star Trek Discovery's third season, in which, you know, from the trailers, it certainly looks like part of the story of next season is going to be about restoring a fallen Federation to its previous place of glory. He answered to that no, that, you know, the Federation, as we've seen in Picard, is one that perhaps in the eyes of some, it's lost its luster, its air of invulnerability, its claim to the moral high ground, but that's hardly a downfall. He talked a little bit about why there have been no references to the Dominion War in the show. And I think by proxy, also why there haven't been references to Law or explicit references to Lal, even though I think there have been some subtler references to Data's quote-unquote first daughter. And basically, it just comes down to a decision that they made in the writer's room to be as sparing as possible with hitting particularly new viewers with too much exposition, too many references to previous things that had happened in the franchise that maybe it wouldn't be immediately obvious what those things were and would make it confusing for new viewers. And I can certainly see why that would be the case. I mean, they definitely have chosen a storyline that is pretty dense in terms of the existing mythology of the show. And the more you layer on top of that, the more inaccessible it becomes. He did confirm the sexual tension that there was in episode 105 between Seven of Nine and Bajazel. And also in terms of talking about the fate of the Borg in the Delta Quadrant, Voyager's final episode, Endgame, leaves things on an uncertain note about what had happened to the Borg. Were they all destroyed? Were they not destroyed? Michael Chabon's position on it, and it seems like this is one that he's talked a lot with Kirsten Beyer about, who's also a producer for the show, is that the contention that all the Borg have died is an arguable one, and that, you know, it's certainly very, very possible that the collective continues in some form in the Delta Quadrant. He did say that he was not anticipating that there would be any Star Trek Picard-related short treks before season two. That's not to say there will not be more short treks, but just that he was not involved in any that were related to his show. And the last thing, and perhaps most controversially, Michael Chabon is not a fan of stardates, and that's why we have not heard any stardates in the show. We have seen a stardate or two on visual displays. We've seen Picard's service record a few times. That's had some stardates in it. When Raffi in episode 105 was looking at the personnel record for her son, it included a star date for his birth, but it's not been included in any of the dialogue. Chabon's position is that star dates, in my view, and I know this is going to make some people mad, spoiler, it made me mad, are a uniquely perverse form of uninformative information. Using a star date tells you precisely nothing. Even people who know how to interpret it and convert them have to go off and interpret and convert them to have them mean something. Wow, Bill, isn't it incredible that we have Michael giving us all of this insight into what's going on behind the scenes? What are some of your reactions to Mr. Chabon's answers?
You know, I have to say it's refreshing to have this level of communication from one of the creatives on a Star Trek show. Can you imagine if Rick Berman were producing Star Trek today, him taking the time to do things like this? I really can't. As far as stardates go, as much as I may disagree with Michael Chabon, the thing is, he's not wrong.
He is not wrong.
They are truly meaningless. It's like, you know, when people celebrate Captain Picard Day because they figure out what day they think it is. Oh, that's great. But there's really nothing that says that that's truly Captain Picard Day, as much as I love the idea behind it. In addition, I love the fact that he has had lengthy discussions with Kirsten Beyer about whether or not all the Borg are dead. You know, Kirsten Beyer, who herself, you know, is rather a Voyager aficionado, has spent time with this. You know, I really have to say, I wish the writers would actually know something about canon. You know, it's clear that they are willing to put in the time to research things they don't know, but they already come to the table with a great amount of knowledge. One last thing I want to comment on is this whole potential link between Picard and Discovery Season 3. And I should clarify that by saying non-existent link. We are seeing nothing of Starfleet in this era of Picard right now. And we're seeing just the tiniest bit of the upper echelons of, you know, the Federation and Starfleet. So I have to take Michael Chabon at his word that, you know, Starfleet is off doing Starfleety things. And it's a very positive future still. Even politics can make the brightest future seem kind of dimly lit. And that's because politicians are genuinely horrible to deal with. And I don't think he's wrong. So I love this kind of access that we get on Instagram. I'm glued to it whenever he posts the answer to these questions. And I can't wait to see what happens in the last two episodes, because I can imagine that he's going to dole out a lot of information.
Yeah, and you're really right about the Starfleet thing. I mean, you know, let's recap what we have seen of Starfleet over eight episodes now. We've had three Starfleet characters: Admiral Clancy, the ensign at the check-in desk at Starfleet Command, and the captain that Raffi convinced to issue diplomatic papers to La Serena.
Right. And Commodore O.
Commodore O, number four. Other than that, we've seen just the briefest glimpse of a Starfleet ship, the Wallenberg-class transports, and we had that flashback scene with Picard and Raffi in their uniforms from 14 years prior, and that has been it. And Chabon's also been really clear that the show is not meant to be a show that is about the entirety of everything that's going on, you know, and he has been really, really reticent to answer questions about, oh, where's Janeway? Where's Chakotay? What happened with Sisko? What happened with this? What happened with, you know, Picard is not meant to be your roundup, catch them all, update in the life of all of these characters that we've seen in the 24th century. It's a focus story about a specific small group of characters who are having a specific set of experiences that are not necessarily reflective of the experiences of everybody who's living at exactly the same time, just in the same way that your everyday living experience and my everyday living experience are really different.
I appreciate that we're looking at a different aspect of Picard's life. You know, Next Generation, everything always ended, for the most part, incredibly positive and on the right side of things. And for the last 14 years or so, that's not been the case for Jean-Luc Picard. He has regrets. He has made mistakes. He has failed people. And it's added a layer of humanism to this character that I think is far more realistic. It's not that I didn't love the portrayal before, but I really love the detail and context they've added to this character now, because it makes him even more adorable to me. I have fallen in love with this character so much more because of Picard, and I already loved him previously, and I didn't think that was possible.
And what's your reaction to this news that maybe we're not going to get any Picard-related short treks?
I'm not surprised by it, honestly. I think that maybe we'd see something tangential at best, kind of like we did with Children of Mars.
Yeah.
It wasn't directly tied to Star Trek Picard, although it was tied to a really key plot element. Maybe we'll see something along those lines. I'm not sure, but I'm okay with it. If it increases the demand for more Picard, or if it causes the anticipation to grow a little more, I'm all right with it, but I'd really still want to see it anyway. I'll be honest.
Certainly in terms of, you know, having just come off the back of that discussion about how this show is a very focused show about a certain number of characters, short treks that are set the same time that maybe deal with different characters don't really feel like they fit this very tightly weaved narrative that they're trying to tell. It feels like it just sort of confuses things, and it reinvites a bunch of those questions about, well, if you're doing this character, why aren't you doing this character? And I want to know what happened to this person, et cetera, and further down the line. But having said that, I am still really enamored with the idea of a series of 24th century short treks that bring back some of these legacy characters just to play with them for 15 minutes and tell a fun story and then have everybody go about their day. But I do understand why they would not go in that direction.
I would love that idea too. In fact, I would love it if they spent the short treks fleshing out characters from all across the Star Trek universe. I really wish they do it for the Discovery Bridge crew so that we could see more of their lives before they got to Discovery. But I would love a short trek that says, well, what's Janeway doing right now? Or Chakotay? Or pick a character. Colonel Kira. I think that would be a really fun way to extend the Star Trek universe for characters that we've loved for years.
Well, our next story this week is that the Star Trek cruise for 2021 is now on sale. This will be the fifth anniversary of the Star Trek cruise. They've been going for 5 years now. The next cruise will be March 7th to the 14th, 2021. It will cover the same, pretty much the same itinerary that they did this year. I think it's also the same cruise ship. Guests announced thus far: George Takei, Walter Koenig, Jonathan Frakes, Marina Sirtis, Gates McFadden, Denise Crosby. Alexander Siddig is really interesting. He doesn't do a lot of conventions, but he is going to do the cruise. A bunch of the Enterprise guys, a bunch more Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and also Anthony Rapp from Star Trek Discovery is an announced guest thus far. More guest announcements are expected. If you are interested in going on the cruise, you are strongly recommended to book your cabin as quickly as possible. They were doing re-ups at this year's cruise, and many of the cruises this year did put down deposits to go back on the cruise next year. So there are not a ton of cabins available for general sale. And based on last year's experience, they sold out within only a few weeks, because since they've moved the cruise from January to March, it does seem like it's a much better time for people to go. Hopefully, by the time we get to 2021, people will be interested in going on cruises again, because obviously the cruise industry has had a bit of bad press lately as a result of this coronavirus issue, but I'm sure it will be mopped up by then and life will have returned to normal. I'm not much of a cruiser, Bill, though I am going on my first cruise later this year to sort of try it out. Do you think the Star Trek cruise is something you would ever be interested in?
My wife and I love to cruise. In fact, I think we've been on 7 together.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We're slated to go on another one this coming September. If everything, you know, goes well, or if the coronavirus threat passes quickly, it's a fun vacation for me because I can go to 3 or 4 different places and only unpack once.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I love food. I'm not going to lie. Everybody's experience is different on a cruise. I've had some cruises that have been, that seemed like I've been nickel and dimed on things. And I've had other cruises that have just been the most incredible experience. And I imagine the truth is somewhere down the middle. I love the atmosphere. I love the vibe. And I would love nothing more than to spend a week in the middle of the Caribbean with a whole bunch of people from Star Trek. But there's no way I'm ever going to get my wife on that boat. I know that people would be looking for my body in international waters if that ever happened. It would be the worst episode of Dateline ever, Alex.
As I say, I've never done it, but every year I find myself more and more intrigued. I did come very close the one year it was in January, and like 3 weeks before the cruise, they still had cabins available and they were selling them for just absurdly low prices.
Right.
And the reason I say I think it sounds interesting is because it does seem like quite a different convention experience than, let's say, Star Trek Las Vegas, because you are with these actors on this cruise ship and they do seem to sort of put on more interactive sessions. For example, I saw Nana Visitor was leading a walking tour of San Juan when they got to Puerto Rico and took a bunch of selfies with the people that she was on the walking tour with. I think there were like cooking classes with somebody and they do all kinds of performances and shows. It does seem like it gets you out of the box of, you know, just you sit in an audience and listen to them talk about their experiences on the show and answer questions. And then you go get an autograph and then maybe you take a picture and then that's probably the extent of your interactions with them. There just seem to be more interesting things that you do to get some time with these people.
I wish they would adapt some of this content or some of these different types of experiences for Star Trek Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Because I would love an inside the actor studio type thing with one of the Trek actors interviewing one of the other Trek actors. This happened with Brent Spiner interviewing Bill Shatner. I would love to, you know, maybe have Terry Farrell do yoga lessons again, or have Nana Visitor do some kind of cooking demo. I think that that would be fantastic. Or even, you know, they did a staged reading of Devil in the Dark with all kinds of Star Trek alum from other series, which I think would be awesome. I think that there are ways to improve Star Trek Las Vegas. And I think that ECP, the company that runs the cruises, could probably teach creation a thing or two, as much as I love Star Trek Las Vegas.
And if there's one thing they are able to bring to STLV this year, I hope it is 1, Mary Chifo, 2, James McKinnon, and 3, that they make her up in the full Laurel makeup and costume like they did on the cruise and let people take pictures with her, because that was awesome.
Oh, that would be incredible. We got to talk briefly to James McKinnon at the Star Trek Picard premiere in Hollywood, and what a great down-to-earth guy, and honestly, what a huge Star Trek fan. I'm sure that he himself would love nothing more than to be able to do that for what I like to call the home crowd at STLV.
Well, we've had a lot of sad news lately about our beloved actors from the Star Trek franchise. franchise. So it is a fun change that we actually have some good news. Sonequa Martin-Green, who is the lead actress of Star Trek Discovery and plays Michael Burnham, has announced that she is pregnant with her second child. SMG, as she is colloquially known, and her husband, Kenrick Green, who also was in Star Trek. He played Burnham's father in the episode The Red Angel, already have a son and are now expecting a baby girl. So hearty congratulations to Sonequa and her family. It's not expected that her pregnancy will impact, certainly won't impact Discovery Season 3, in that they've wrapped filming a couple of weeks ago. They're now in their hiatus period from the season. Assuming a Season 4 goes ahead, it will not happen for a number of months. Given how much Star Trek there is in the pipeline, you know, maybe there'll be a slightly longer hiatus to allow Sonequa some time to finish out her pregnancy and then take some maternity leave as well. But obviously none of that has been announced yet. And I'm sure that from our perspective as fans, we will not really experience any interruptions as a result of it. So this is just hearty, hearty, good, good news, Bill. Join me in wishing congratulations for Sonequa.
Oh, absolutely. To her whole family. This is just such a great thing. You know, seeing the picture of her and her husband and son, they are just all beaming with excitement. She looks wonderful. Clearly, she's already begun to show and everybody's real psyched about it. The one thing we got to change is that we have to get her son some Star Trek pajamas, because those Star Wars things are not going to do.
Agreed. Agreed. Agreed.
I think this is going to be great. I think you're right. There's not going to be really a production delay because of this. They're on hiatus now. She's clearly several months along. By the time they start shooting again, and I'm sure they'll accommodate whatever time off she needs for the new baby, I think they're going to be right back in the swing of things, and it's going to be great. Hopefully, the baby gets to spend lots of time growing up on Star Trek sets.
Absolutely. And we know, you know, there's plenty of Star Trek still underway in Toronto. Section 31, as far as you know, still on the way. There continue to be these rumblings about a Pike show. And so, you know, it's not like anybody's going to be sitting on their hands for the next few months, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's no shortage of studio space in the Toronto area now with the CBS stages in Mississauga. And I can imagine that there may be more than one Star Trek series firing up there. You never know.
You never know. All right. Well, we've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain, but it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, I and my guest give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about Picard, Discovery, Lower Decks, any of the shows coming up, franchise as a whole, merchandise, etc. So Bill, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
I have a theory, and in fact, it's kind of a double-headed theory.
All right.
I think a Pike series is going to happen sooner than later.
Yes, sir.
And I think it's going to happen instead of Section 31.
Okay.
I think that Section 31 is probably going to get put on the back burner indefinitely. I don't have anything to back this up, but there's far more jazz about a potential Pike series. There's not even a PR page on the CBS PR site for Section 31 yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a feeling I get. You know, there's lots of rumors for start dates, but no announcement of a start date. And that should have been happening by this point. But that's just kind of where my head is at right now. I think that Section 31 could just fade into nothingness.
It has been strangely quiet on the Section 31 front.
Yeah.
Given that, you know, as recently as New York Comic Con, Alex Kurtzman was saying Discovery Season 3 will wrap and then Section 31 Season 1 will start. It is sort of odd that even as late as January on the press junket for the Picard premiere, when they were talking about Section 31, Heather Caden and Alex Kurtzman were sort of more circumspect about, you know, they said the show was happening, but it didn't sound as much of a sure thing as it probably should have, since we're now March and Discovery has finished filming. And so Section 31 should be right around the corner. The only thing I wonder, though, is if they are holding all news about Discovery and any of these future shows because Picard is on right now, and they really want the focus to 100% be on Picard. And 3 weeks from now, after the Picard season finale has aired, we are going to be eating our words on all of this, because they're going to come right out with, you know, here's all the casting announcements for Section 31. You know, it's going into production this year and we're off to the races. I think the evidence for a Pike series is continuing to mount. You know, there's this sort of Production Weekly and all that kind of industry insider tabloid things that sort of lay out production timelines for shows. And I guess supposedly there's a Star Trek Trek Strange New Worlds that's listed as having some kind of production timeline up in Toronto this year. And if you were a betting person, and that is really a thing, you know, that's almost certainly the Pike show. But I suspect that we will get lots more information about what comes next as soon as Picard wraps. The only question I have in my mind is when that's going to happen, because the CBS upfronts, which are taking place in early May, have actually been canceled. They're the first television network to cancel their in-person upfront presentation because of coronavirus. And they've not announced sort of how they're going to get a lot of the information out there. And that's probably the place where we would get a big announcements on the future of the franchise. That was where we got our first trailer for Star Trek Picard last year. So yeah, it's interesting. I did see Bo-Yun Kim tweet something a couple of days ago about working at home remotely and how she was communicating with, and I think she used the term, her writer's room. So that does sort of imply to me that there is still activity taking place on Section 31. But I agree with you. It is odd that we haven't heard anything yet. And we'll just have to see if we do hear something.
I will happily eat my words if that turns out to be the case. You know, the other complexity here, you mentioned coronavirus. I think earlier today, Disney, Warner Brothers, and Netflix announced halting of all active filming for movies and TV shows. I have to imagine that CBS is going to follow suit soon, which means that anything that's preparing to shoot up in Toronto or in the Toronto area will likely also be halted. That probably could put a further delay into the schedule. Couple that with nobody has any idea if Comic-Con is going to happen in San Diego yet.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because we just don't know. There's so much uncertainty.
Right.
What does that do to the media timeline? Normally they make their big announcements at SDCC. If that doesn't happen, where do they drop these huge announcements? And I think that's really a huge question.
Yeah, I mean, you have to figure if things like San Diego Comic-Con and the upfronts go away, just sticking this stuff in Variety and the Hollywood Reporter and Deadline is probably as good as it gets in terms of getting some of this stuff out there. So, you know, it may not be all at the same time. It might start to happen around it. But yeah, event cancellations are sort of creeping further and further out. WonderCon, which is taking place in April, is now gone. And that's normally, it's obviously much smaller than San Diego Comic-Con, but it's normally a place where there are genre-based announcements. We've not really had any Star Trek announcements out of WonderCon over the last few years, but you normally get stuff out of there, and that's not happening anymore. And, you know, we've got the upfronts after that, and we've got San Diego Comic-Con after that, and then we've got STLV after that, and it's uncertain at this point, you know, how long this thing's going to last and what they're going to say. And I think it's a great point, you know, given the spread of this virus and the strong recommendations around social distancing and self-isolation to sort of slow the spread of this disease, having lots of people all in one cooped up studio soundstage shooting a show for 14 hours a day is probably not a particularly good way of doing things. And, you know, it's a blessing that this falls in the hiatus for Star Trek Picard, because, you know, somebody like Patrick Stewart is in one of those higher risk age brackets. And so, you know, CBS need to make sure that they are being really careful in what they ask of some of these actors, knowing that they're potentially putting them at risk if they are putting them in front of the camera.
Well, the one thing I know for sure is that if Alex Kurtzman wants to make any kind of announcement, I'm sure that Weekly Trek would accommodate him no problem and take the exclusive, you know, for the betterment of Trekdom.
Happily, I would fall on my sword for that. If Alex wants to come on and take over my show for a week and announce what the next Star Trek show will be, like he did at STLV 2 years ago when he announced Patrick Stewart came back, and if he wants to bring Michelle Yao on the show to personally announce when the start date is for filming of Section 31, you know, I will do that service for the fans.
You are a credit to that uniform, young sir. I salute you.
Well, my theory this week is a wish, and it's another listener submission. Thank you again to all the listeners who've been sending in wishes or theories. This one comes from Kerry, who's on Twitter at CareBearLib, K-E-R-R-B-E-A-R-L-I-B. And her wish is that they bring back Denise Crosby to reprise her role as Sela in Star Trek Picard, which it seems like maybe is something that is partially on the cards. At Destination Star Trek in the UK last October, Denise Crosby did say that, in much the same way that Robert Picardo had said earlier in the summer that she'd been approached by the producers to have some conversation about whether there was interest there in appearing in the show. And I think it would be great. You know, we've obviously got a number of really great Romulan characters this season. My guess is they probably don't last the season. And so if there's going to be more of this Romulan storyline, Sela might be a really interesting character to bring back, given, you know, that sort of relationship with Picard and the way she feels about Picard, given his role with her creation, frankly, is such a conflicted and tortured and really interesting one. And to kind of put that relationship in the hands of Michael Chabon, who, even though he will not be show running next season, is an executive producer, will be writing two of the episodes, and Terry Matalas, who will be the showrunner next season, I think I'd like to see that. What do you think, Bill?
You know, I have to agree with you. In my own secret headcanon, which I haven't really mentioned to anybody before now, I kind of am hoping that Narissa and Narek are Sela's children. Because I think that would be a really fantastic twist. Are they? I doubt it. But that would just be so delightful and just a natural way to bring her in. That I'm keeping my fingers crossed. But again, I think we've established that I'm usually wrong when I make predictions, Alex. So I'm going to go with the status quo on this one. Whatever everybody else thinks, I'm there.
Well, I mean, if we find there is a bunch of hair dye in Narissa's quarters and actually she is a natural blonde, then I think you are you're dead on.
Well, you know, who knows? Their dad could have been just jet black.
True.
You know, Romulan hair as a northerner. You never know.
You never know. Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, or the future of the franchise that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Bill Smith, for joining me today. Bill, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
Oh, thanks so much, Alex. You can find me on Twitter at TrekGeekBill, or you can find us just about anywhere at TrekGeeks, the entire network. Somebody's going to respond, and it's usually me.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek, and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And just a note, our contest for 5-star reviews is still open if you're interested in winning one of either an Eagle Moss XL-sized Katinga-class Klingon battlecruiser or a copy of Una McCormack's Last Best Hope, the Star Trek Picard prequel tie-in novel. Get yourself over to your podcast player of choice, submit a 5-star review, screenshot it, send it to me, and you will be entered to win. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.